What's going on, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Blue Jays. I'm your co-host, Lucas Suisse. Of course, I want to thank all the listeners who make Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. Again, you can find my work on Twitter at We Sports, where I appear on Sportsnet, ESPNZ, Undefeated, the Toronto Star, as well as play-by-play broadcasting for Saga 960 AM Radio. Of course, the Locked On Blue Jays podcast is free and available on all your favorite podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. So make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe.
You are Locked On Blue Jays, your daily Toronto Blue Jays podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
With another busy episode on the podcast today, as we continue our off-season coverage, of course, I'm once again joined by MLB analyst Jen Smith, and we have a very special guest on the pod today. He is Nick Ashburn. You can find his work on Sportsnet and Yahoo Sports Canada, writing about baseball. He's also the co-host of the Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast. Nick, welcome to the Locked On Blue Jays podcast, man.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're real pleasure to have you on, and obviously such a impactful week, impactful last couple weeks. If you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan, with a lot of interesting things happening in the off season thus far. I know, Nick, we're early in the off season, if you will, but how would you sort of evaluate just what the Blue Jays have done at this point in the off season?
I think you'd have to consider it to be a success so far. You know, the Jose Berríos contract is not only massive in the short term, he's a building block for years to come that's going to fit really nicely with this core of position players that they have. And then, you know, the other big event, arguably, is the, you know, losing Steven Matz to the Cardinals. And while the Blue Jays clearly wanted to have him back, there was interest there. You know, 4 years is a lot for a guy who kind of projects as a, you know, a five, maybe a four. I know that he was good for the team last year and he did make some adjustments. So that could be maybe a little bit low on him, but the reality is giving out this level of contract over 4 years to a guy who is not going to be, you know, for lack of a better term, let's say a playoff rotation type guy. He's going to be a guy who fills innings for you. It's not easy to get those guys necessarily, but you can find them and you normally don't have to commit over that length of time. They already have extensions and did something fairly, I don't know if it's purely team friendly, but let's call it a win-win, Berríos. And then they, you know, that probably avoided cutting into their flexibility more than they would have wanted to.
Nick, you wrote a recent piece for Yahoo Sports on the Jose Berríos extension, and you call it a calculated leap of faith. What was it about his past that caused the Blue Jays to project 7 years into the future and have signed him to that extension?
It's a lot, you know, there's a lot of that goes into something like that. And realistically, any pitcher for that amount of time is incredibly difficult to invest in. I mean, we talk about the year by year of what this contract's going to cost. He's not going to cost ace money. He's going to cost, you know, essentially what they're paying Ryu, but he just checks every box, right? He's younger than guys who are going to reach free agency. He's also been incredibly durable throughout his career. He's a guy who has logged a massive inning load without issues throughout his career. And then he's got stuff that I'm of the belief is going to age relatively well. He's got this big sweeping curveball. That's not the kind of thing that's going to go away. His changeup is pretty good. His fastball, the velocity on it is more solid than spectacular. And I think when you sign a pitcher to that length of contract, you worry about his stuff diminishing. Like by the end of this contract, Berríos's stuff is not going to be as good as it was today. But if he were a guy who was all about, you know, putting three figures on that radar gun and the rest of his repertoire wasn't well developed, then you'd start to worry, like, in, you know, in year four, is he going to be a guy that's even, you know, big contributor for us in the rotation? And that's just not the case with him. He really checks every box. It could still go totally wrong just because this is an incredibly long period of time. And because we know what happens to pitchers' shoulders and elbows, it's a violent action that human beings probably shouldn't be engaged in, but this is where we are. But if you are going to do that, and that was kind of the point of the piece, if you are going to do that, if you're going to sign a pitcher to a deal this long, he is absolutely the guy that you want to be making that deal with.
Absolutely. And that's where, for me, I really liked the Berríos deal. I think it was probably right now. I mean, we don't have crystal balls here, Nick, and can't predict into the future in terms of what the Blue Jays will do the rest of the offseason. But I would argue that this is probably right now the top move that they made. I mean, it was a little bit shocking how it happened so quickly. But the fact that they were able to get this piece of business done so quickly, I think just goes to show you not only Berríos's commitment to the organization, and we heard him speak in his press conference about how much he really loves Toronto, loves the team culture and the diversity of the city. But I also think it speaks to the front office's commitment to Jose Berríos and how he can provide a lot of innings. And you speak about that durability. I think it's something that's rare right now in big league pitchers that you might be a little bit concerned about. But with Berríos, the durability is there. And I think that's so important for a competitive team. And I think he's just going to get better. I think, you know, the fact that you have someone that you can trust going out there once every 5 days, it's just going to be fantastic. And I think it's just a welcome addition to have as your top pitcher right now in the Blue Jays rotation.
Yeah. And they made a huge commitment to him. He made a commitment to them. The opt out there is interesting too, because he said that, you know, I believe in this team, I want to be a part of this. But he's also someone who really wants to win. And if this whole window of Blue Jays contention goes horribly wrong, he's got a way out. Like, you know, if Vladdy never signs an extension and walks, if Bo's the same situation, he's got a way to get out as stability and rotation. Like, Manoah was a guy that you could plug in and say, you know, for the next X amount of years, this is a guy we can count on. You know, he only did as a rookie, but he was so successful, I think it's fair to say that. But beyond that, you know, we saw Ryu's stuff diminish a little bit last year. It's not 100% clear what you're going to get from him over the next 2 years. And there's really nobody on the book. So it kind of reminds me, and this is not a comparison that Blue Jays fans are going to like, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of when they signed Randall Grichuk, because they didn't have anybody. Like, there was just nobody on the books, and they felt, okay, we need to fill with somebody here. Now, that turned out to not be the right inclination, and it turned out to not be the right deal. But this is a similar situation where you look at the future of the Blue Jays rotation, and even in the farm system, like, there aren't a lot of guys who you feel comfortable are going to come up and be good. You know, Simeon Woods Richardson at a time was that guy potentially. Manoah obviously has graduated, but there's not a lot of guys you thought, oh, 22 and on, here are the guys who are going to make up a rotation. And he's just such a solid pitcher. And yeah, just the most dependable guy you possibly could have gotten. Like, even Robbie Ray, who was more spectacular last year, obviously Cy Young winner. If the Blue Jays had signed Robbie Ray instead, for instance, and had not signed Berríos to this extension, and I'm not saying that both can't happen, that would have been a much riskier move that you would have not been as sure that the next sort of 3, 4, 5 years were in safe hands, the way Berríos gives you that sense of security.
Nick, obviously the offseason has just begun, and there's a lot of uncertainty with the pending CBA deadline, and nobody knows what that will look like. So we might have a flurry of activity leading up to that deadline, or, you know, most of that activity might get pushed until once a new deal is reached. But the Jays still have work to do this offseason. They obviously need to shore up the infield, probably add a third baseman. You could look at second base and upgrades that could be made there. If you were in that front office and part of that decision making, what moves would you like to see them make, whether they're free agent moves or possible trade targets? What would you like to see get done ideally?
I mean, you pointed to a lot of needs, and it's true. Like, there's a lot of needs on this team. A lot of talent has walked off this team. That's the reality. I think that the infield is a place that definitely needs to be addressed. If I were in the position where I was making these decisions, I would be taking a good hard look at some of the high profile infielders. Like, we saw what Semien brought to that infield last year. It's going to be really hard to replicate that. And Kevin Biggio is a guy who can come and potentially play second base. I think he's been miscast in his career, to be honest, as a guy who bounces around and does a little bit of everything. Because I think he's actually quite good at second base if you leave him there. So maybe I'd be more targeting someone who's a third baseman. And as I mentioned before, when you're signing these big deals, I feel personally more comfortable signing them with a position player than with a pitcher because of all the injury risk associated with that. So my big fish acquisition might be going after someone who is the third baseman, whether that's a shortstop that can convert. We've talked about whether that discussion happens with Bichette at some point a million times, like that's been hashed and rehashed again and again and again. You probably can't do that unless you get someone who's sort of almost legendary on defense, like take a Javi Baez or someone like that. Like maybe at that point, then you can have that conversation with Bichette. But I'd be looking at third baseman. I'd be looking at Chris Bryant. He's someone who I really liked coming into the season last year for them. They clearly need another pitcher in the rotation. Like the rotation right now, if it's Berríos, Manoah, Ryu, that's kind of a 2-3-4 right now. Not to say that they're necessarily going to get that number, because leaving two spots for the Pearson, Stripling, Hatch, that's just not good enough. And we saw last year, they tend to like to get relievers in bunches rather than really investing in the one guy. That didn't really work out last year. That bullpen is pretty thin right now too. So I'm looking at maybe a big fish acquisition. It looks like the way that we're hearing the rumors and whatnot, that will be in the rotation. If it were me, maybe I'd put in the infield instead, but sort of one biggish starter, one decent infield. And then you sort of fill in with a depth starter and a couple of bullpen guys it's a pretty long shopping list, to be honest.
It is. Let's just imagine that the Blue Jays, for whatever reason, are able to only re-sign one of Robbie Ray or Marcus Semien. Who are you signing?
I mean, personally, I think I'd have to go with Marcus Semien. He has traditionally not been very good in recent years. He's a Gold Glove caliber at second base. We know that he has sort of an outsized impact in the clubhouse. We'll never know exactly what's that worth, quote unquote, right. But we know what the players say about him and his influence there. Ray's success last year is remarkable, but it is a little bit harder to trust. You know, Semien in 2019, he did it. He was an MVP candidate. He was a guy who was among the very best players in the league, whereas Ray has never really been to be fair to him, he's been an all-star, he's had some good seasons, but he's never been this guy before. So I'd rather bet on the guy who has shown me this level multiple times. That guy's Semien, and then that just folds into the our position players better investments, and I would generally believe in that. So if I could get one or the other, I'd probably get Semien, although it seems like there's more noise around Ray right now.
Today's episode is brought to you by DirecTV. I want to tell you what a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle. DirecTV Stream brings you live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, which means you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. And the best part? There's no annual contract. So stop waiting and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. With the Semien rumors of him maybe going to the West Coast, it could be an off season where you have, both Semien and Ray walk. But Nick, as Marco Shapiro made reference to during his end of season availability, it's all about getting better, right? And obviously what Semien and Ray both provided in 2021 was massive to this team in terms of their on-field performance and some of the intangibles, which you mentioned. But the thing about it is, it's all about trying to find ways to get better. And certainly the front office, they probably have the big whiteboard right now with all the different combinations or permutations, if you will, to figure out how you can get better. It's a difficult task, but I think that with some of the names being floated out there potentially, and the fact that the Blue Jays are a competitive team, they're willing to spend to get better, I think that's an encouraging sign, despite perhaps two of their big UFAs walking to other teams.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we get really hung up on an individual player or two players And in this case, it's very easy to see why. These guys were incredible for the Blue Jays in 2021. The reality is that's just not how teams think about it. They think about the total production of the team, and there's a million different ways you can shape that. Like, you can get a second baseman to replace Semien, for instance, or shortstop that you convert to second base in the same model. Or you can have Biggio slot in there, know that you're taking a downgrade, and then choose to go find your upgrade elsewhere. Like, this, there's some flexibility on this team. There's also guys who, you know, realistically, you're not going to replace Semien, and you're just not going to get guys who are that good again. But what you might get is Alec Manoa, Beer, you know, guys as young as Bo and Vlad. We forget that, you know, they've been around for a while, but they're still at an age where they tend to find more and more offense. And then, you know, we talked a lot in this offseason about Gabriel Moreno. Like, he's a guy who could come quickly and solidify a position that has been a problem for the Blue Jays for as long as anyone can remember. So you don't necessarily have to, quote unquote, replace those guys. You can find a different shape, and you can get that internal improvement as well, which I think they also hope kind of comes from the bullpen. Even if they don't make huge investments, it seems like there's just such a torrential downpour of injuries and bad luck that almost whatever you do, you're going to get a better outcome in 2022 with that than you did last year. So I think a lot of fans look at it and they say, oh man, how are we going to replace Ray? How are we going to replace Semien? And that's not necessarily the name of the game.
Nick, you wrote a piece for Sportsnet titled "What the History of Elite Young Catchers Tells Us About Jays Prospect Gabriel Moreno." And obviously, Moreno's been this piece that has done a really nice job in terms of just, you know, tearing up the fall league, being an elite catching prospect. So I'm just curious, from your perspective, when writing that piece, just what you learned in that process and what, I guess, Gabriel Moreno can show us just about, you know, elite young catchers at this level.
Yeah, it was interesting to go through. And actually, the day that piece came out, we had Sam Dykstra of MLB Pipeline on Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast. So it was good to talk to him as well and get all that context at once. And one thing that you get when you talk to prospect guys is there's always this reticence to believe in catchers, because something can always go wrong with injuries. They can be moved off the position, which makes their bat less valuable. Attrition can kind of take away their athleticism. There's so many negative things that happen with catchers. So we very rarely see catchers make it to like the top 10 of Baseball America's prospects, because there's always that hesitation. And Moreno is a guy who broke through and had that recognition. I specified Baseball America because they've been doing it for longer than anybody else. And he broke through and he made their top 10 in the offseason. And guys who can achieve that, it's not guaranteed. You know, there's some forgettable names out there for sure. Ben Davis, Michael Barrett with the Expos wasn't a particularly good catcher. It's no guarantee. But guys who reach that level of prospect pedigree, they contribute, and they contribute a lot, and they tend to do it very quickly. Like, the vast majority of these guys are near league average hitters or above league average hitters, even in their rookie year, which is pretty outstanding for a catcher. So what I wanted to do with that piece is just kind of establish a baseline of expectation, because generally speaking, we have prospects, we get this hype and we just think, oh, this guy is really good. Okay, he's really good. What does that mean? Like, what could that look like? And the reality is that I came away with information being more optimistic about Moreno, because guys who've been in his position and achieved this level of notoriety as prospects who are catchers have succeeded at a pretty incredible rate.
Nick, what is it about Moreno's skill set? Like, from an analytical point of view, what is it about his skill set that makes him such a highly touted prospect?
Yeah, first of all, it's interesting. So I asked Sam Dykstra on the podcast, what are his weaknesses? Because I just felt like there was so much hype. Like, okay, can I hear one thing? Like, where's the level of concern? And this is a guy who was watching Arizona Fall League, and he had a really hard time doing it. And the reason why is he has this really balanced skill set. Like, he's good behind the plate. He can block, he can catch, he can throw. Obviously, a lot of the sort of leadership game calling stuff, he's very there's no concerns with that, but it's not like people are calling him Yadi Molina out of the gate. It's really the bat, though. It's the bat that people are most excited about. And it's not necessarily this massive, you know, booming Giancarlo Stanton type of bat. It's more of a consistent hard contact, line drives. In the Arizona Fall League, he hit a ton of doubles. Like he's gap to gap with hard contact. When guys are doing that at 21, they get older, they get bigger, they get stronger, and a lot of those balls end up going over the fence. So I think right now you're looking at really good contact and understanding of what to do at the plate and sort of this very strong gap power and home run power too. And the idea is that as he gets older, stronger, more experienced, a lot of those doubles might be clearing in the wall in the end. And then you're looking at, you know, a guy who's sticking behind the plate competently and then hitting a bunch of home runs as well. Now that's no guarantee, but that I think that is really where the excitement derives from, is that this is a guy who's got a great contact tool, hits a ton of line drives, hits the ball hard, great exit velocities. And then someday that might result in these, you know, gaudy home run totals.
I love Thanksgiving. All the good food and treats and plenty of them. But maybe you want a yummy dessert that isn't so full of calories and sugar. It's the perfect time for Built Bar, the new holiday dessert. Replace the coconut cream pie with coconut Built Bar, or go to raspberry Built Bar instead of that raspberry pie. Lots of good flavors to replace any pie. Low calorie, low carb, low fat, high protein. Built Bar is a terrific option when you're hungry. And if Thanksgiving isn't coming around soon enough, go for a Built Bar or two. Now, how do you get Built Bar, you may ask? Well, go to Built.com and use promo code LOCK15. And you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. It's interesting, Nick, because the Blue Jays right now are in a position where they have just a ton of catchers, right? Like they have Danny Jansen, Alejandro Kirk, Reese McGuire. I mean, you have now, of course, Gabriel Moreno in the mix, who's coming up the ranks. I'm just curious from your perspective, because obviously, I mean, there's still debate about who is going to be the opening day starter behind the plate. And I know that Alejandro Kirk's name has been thrown around a bit in terms of rumors for trades. I guess with the rise of Moreno coming, you know, up soon to the majors, I mean, does Kirk sort of feel like a little bit like that odd man out, if you will, or that potential trade piece that if the Blue Jays can make the right trade, he can be potentially in a package to get someone to bolster their team?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Alejandro Kirk is someone that fans really love. I was talking about this with someone the other day. I think it was Michael Hode at Yahoo, just about how he had this folk hero status, you know, the moment he arrived in Toronto, and he was absolutely beloved, and he's this unique player. But the reality is that he's not the prospect that Moreno is. It is tough to have a situation where you have two very young, inexperienced catchers who might be a little bit more difficult to trust defensively. Danny Jansen gives you a really steady floor. Like they like what they get from Jansen. The bat has been disappointing at times. He came on strong at the end of last year. I think that was maybe underappreciated, but Kirk does feel a little bit superfluous, and he's an interesting guy as a trade chip because he's undoubtedly talented. You know, we know what he can do with the bat. He's been good kind of as soon as he arrived as a pro, but catching prospects can be difficult in trades. You know, the team has to feel pretty confident in them. They can't be moved elsewhere. There's the injury problems I already discussed. So yes, Alejandro Kirk is this potential trade trip, but you got to find someone who is willing to fall in love with this kind of unique body type and unique player and see him as a catcher of the future. And it might be hard to come by that team, but Danny Jansen gives them kind of that veteran floor that they can count on. I don't really see Reese McGuire's being in the mix, to be honest. So if I had to guess who's the Blue Jays starting catcher on opening day, I would say Jansen. I don't think that necessarily means that Kirk is 100% gone, but the Blue Jays are clearly going to explore trades with Kirk because the way Moreno is coming, it's hard to imagine what his role with this team will be.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Kirk was supposedly part of a trade package at the deadline with Cleveland for Jose Ramirez, and that ended up not happening. So I would imagine that, you know, that would be something that the Blue Jays might end up revisiting. With regards to Danny Jansen, you know, he's interesting because he hit at every level until he got to the majors and has been inconsistent at best. But as you mentioned, he was really good towards the end of the season. What adjustments did he make? And do you see that as being something that he can carry forward?
It's overly simplistic, I think, sometimes to say things like this, but he really started hitting the ball with a lot more authority and kind of getting behind the ball. And the problem with Jansen has never been that he doesn't know how to hit. Like, he's got a good idea at the plate. He can take his walks. He can put the bat on the ball. Like, sometimes he'll have the odd strikeout spike, but he's someone that you watch at the plate and you're kind of thinking along with him and you're like, okay, I get it. I get why you swung for that. I get why you took that. I feel like I have an understanding of what your plan is right now. And then he'd get himself in these good situations, good hitters counts. He would bring the pitcher to him and then he wouldn't execute. And it seemed like at the end of last year, he was doing a lot of the same things. He was getting into the right counts. He was letting the right pitches pass him by. And when he found that good situation, he was just executing at a much higher level. And that's interesting because even Jansen as a hitter, when he succeeded at the minor leagues, was never really a power hitter. He was more of a gap-to-gap contact type of hitter. And last year, he really did show kind of a level of power. You know, he slugged 473 last year. Like, that's really good for a catcher. You know, his ISO of 250, like that, those are pretty impressive numbers. And it's only 205 plate appearances. It's a small sample, but he showed a little bit more juice than we're used to seeing from him because his quality of contact numbers generally haven't been that good. So are we willing to say, oh, he's turned the corner, he's found the level of power. If you match that with his approach, he's going to be a great hitter. It's too early to say any of that, but it's definitely interesting. And I think it's fair to say that you feel differently about Jansen today than you did in, I don't know, June, July, when it looked like it was, you know, yet another season of him being consistently below average behind the plate, or not behind the plate, at the plate.
Nick, obviously a lot of our listeners to our podcast, I mean, are interested in the Blue Jays and what moves they're going to be making this off season. But you did a piece recently with Sportsnet about maybe what other teams in the AL East are doing to looking to improve. Because obviously the AL East is one of the most, you know, if not the most competitive division in baseball. You look at those four teams, the Rays, Red Sox, Yankees, and Blue Jays, I think they're going to be in the mix for the next few years, just given, you know, their trajectory as franchises. But I guess from your perspective, what player or players do you see as potential dangers for the Blue Jays if they sign with one of those AL East rivals, and why?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys who, you know, I kind of, in that piece, I picked out kind of future Blue Jays killers. I just think it's interesting when you're a fan of one team, and this makes perfect sense, but you approach the offseason, you think, damn, I hope my team gets X, Y, and Z player. But it's kind of equally important that the teams you're cheering against don't get X, Y, and Z player. Like, if the Blue Jays don't improve, but also the Yankees don't improve, in the big picture, that's okay. If the Yankees get a ton of reinforcements and the Blue Jays don't improve enough, like that, those type of things are the things that really matter, especially in an AL East division. So there's a couple of guys that stood out to me. One thing, the Blue Jays, we know, add to their lineup potentially, but this is a very right-handed heavy lineup. So I was concerned for the Blue Jays, on the Blue Jays' behalf, of seeing guys who will really kill right-handed hitters. And, you know, Max Scherzer is a classic example of that. Like, Max Scherzer in pinstripes. And there's some Blue Jays memories of them actually doing quite well against Max Scherzer. We might recall Kevin Pillar hitting some home runs against Max Scherzer and how improbable that all seemed when it happened. But the reality is he's got that nasty fastball slider cutter mix that makes things very hard on right-handed hitters. Kendall Graveman, it looks like that's a bullet dodge, but he was a guy who, as a reliever, was just truly shut down against those guys. And sort of the flip side of that coin was defensive guys on that side of the field, guys who can shut down the left side of the field where the Blue Jays are going to hit a lot. And one of those names is Trevor Story. And the Yankees, for instance, I know I keep using the Yankees as an example, but the Rays never spend money and the Red Sox are a little bit bogged down in some of the contracts on their books. The Yankees have a shortstop problem. And if he's the type of guy, a guy who's been sort of gold glove caliber in the past, who takes that role, that could be really hard on some of the Blue Jays hitters who consistently put the ball there. Vladdy's a good example. This guy hits rockets on the ground all the time. So the last thing he wants to see is someone in the division get kind of a gold glove caliber shortstop. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. The Yankees, as I said, I think are probably the team in that mix to watch. We, you know, we saw the Rays get Wander Franco. Like that, that's their huge move, but that's more of a, that's a franchise right. move. That's a, this is what the future of the Rays is, and well done on their part getting a player of that caliber over that amount of years. And it's going to be foundational for them. That's not big picture for the Jays, because we knew he was going to be there for a significant amount of time. So if you're watching from the perspective of a Jays fan, that doesn't really matter, but that was their big play. The Yankees and the Red Sox, I don't want to totally rule them out, but the Yankees are the ones who you might see make that big upgrade that makes you think, oh, now the Blue Jays are potentially falling behind, but we'll see how that plays out.
We certainly will. And one of the things that, again, is so interesting is just, again, the competitiveness of this division. I mean, we had three teams in that division make the playoffs. The Blue Jays, of course, were one game out. And I know, Nick, you wrote a lot on the 2021 MLB postseason that unfolded, unfortunately, without the Blue Jays. Did you learn anything or take anything away from any of those teams in the postseason this year? Or are you still under the impression, like, that I think the Blue Jays front office feels like, that you just got to get in, because if you get in, anything can happen. And, you know, you could have a case where, you know, you look at the Atlanta Braves not getting as many wins, you know, go to the World Series and win the World Series, or the case, of course, of the Red Sox getting into the wild card and then going to the ALCS. So just curious if you had any takeaways from the 2021 postseason and, you know, applying it for perhaps next year.
Yeah, I think people definitely have that mindset of, okay, if you get in, anything can happen. And that is generally speaking true, but I think it's more true for the Blue Jays potentially than other teams, not because they're built in some special way that is going to be good in the playoffs, but because if you just get in the AL East, in this division we've discussed that has, you know, 3 to 4 playoff caliber teams, you're good already. Like, if you just get in because you won a weak division, and we've seen that in the past, teams just, for whatever reason, there's a division in baseball where there just aren't any quality squads coming out of that division. Just getting in probably isn't good enough, because you were just good enough to kind of top your rivals. But if you're good enough to make in the AL East, I think you're definitely good enough to win the World Series. And the Blue Jays, you know, as people have said all the time with what happened to the Braves, were the 2021 Blue Jays good enough in the World Series? Sure, they were good enough in the sense that many teams were good enough. I don't think it's fair, but a lot of people might say, like, oh, if they got in, they definitely would have made a run. I don't think that's fair to say. There's plenty of good teams in the AL, and the Braves showed that they were a good team at the end as well. So a lot of times when it comes to playoffs, people want to have that big lesson. And the reality is that it's a different beast every time. Like, after 2015, for instance, you could have said, oh, well, the Royals won the World Series and they went the year before. And the reason why is that you got to build a team around contact hitting, defense, and an amazing bullpen. And, you know, that didn't prove to be the secret sauce to winning the World Series. It's just what won in that little window of time. And so I think people should hesitate to say, oh, okay, this team won the World Series, therefore this is how to win the World Series, because it's a lot more complicated than that.
Nick, we're running short on time, but, you know, obviously getting to the playoffs is one season or one thing, sorry. And then, you know, actually succeeding in the postseason is also another. Right now, based on current lineup construction and money that teams might have to spend this offseason, is there a team right now that makes you nervous from a Blue Jays perspective?
I mean, everyone in their division. I don't know if I want to go so far to rule out the Red Sox. I think some of the success the Red Sox had last year isn't necessarily going to be repeatable. But from a Blue Jays perspective, I think it's interesting looking at other teams in the AL, maybe not necessarily the AL East. Yeah. You got to come out the AL East. But there was a lot of people being very dismissive of the Chicago White Sox, for instance, in the playoffs. Like, they came in and they really took their lumps against the Astros. But that's a team that's got a really good, like, in many ways similar to the Blue Jays, a really good young position player core. They've got some elite starters to build on top of that. It looks like they're going to continue to spend some money. I know that there was a lot of chortling about the tweet about how they were looking at both Ray and Semien. It would be very surprising if they ended up landing both those players. But that's a team that I think took a lot of flack because they had four bad games, but could be a really big player in the American League. You know, the Astros don't really look like they're going anywhere. And then, you know, if you flip it to the other side, the Milwaukee Brewers had a weird playoffs, but they're a team with the pitching they have that felt kind of built for the postseason. And then that, you know, the NL West with the Dodgers, Padres, and Giants, like those are three very good teams. The Padres probably won't have as bad luck next year. But yeah, as a Blue Jays fan, I think that it's very easy to zero in on what are the Yankees doing? What are the Rays doing? What's going on with the Red Sox? And there are other teams just within the American League, and the White Sox and the Astros stand out, that are really, really good. And just because they don't play in the AL East, it doesn't mean they're a joke. Just because they have some, you know, lesser competition sometimes, it doesn't mean their players aren't talented. And yeah, those teams, you know, the Blue Jays saw that in their playoff runs in 2016, for instance. They faced an Indians team, and there's this notion of, oh, well, this team, you know, isn't as good, like they came through the Central Division, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, the Blue Jays ended up getting it handed to them. So that's something I think I'd be wary of as a Blue Jays fan, to think that their battle exists only within the confines of the AL East if they're going to be a playoff team.
Nick Ashburn is a baseball contributor for Sportsnet and Yahoo Sports Canada. He's also the co-host of Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast. Nick, an absolute pleasure to have you on the Locked On Blue Jays podcast. And before we let you go, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Nick Ashburn. And you really can't find me too many other places because I'm a real old man when it comes to social media, not on Instagram or TikTok, anything like that. So if you want to find my work, Twitter is definitely the way to go about it.
And similar to Jen as well, where can people find you on Twitter, Jen?
People can find me at baseball_Jen, and that is Jen with two N's. And I do have an Instagram account, but I rarely use it, so I'll put myself in that old category as well.
Probably a good call to limit the amount of social channels we all have. Anyway, we thank Nick for coming on. We also thank everyone for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen every day. Make your second listen of the day Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets is hosted by your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. Locked On Blue Jays is also free and available on all platforms. So for this episode of Locked On Blue Jays, I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. We'll chat again soon.